Blog Talk Radio.
Tupac, please. He's going to tell black people what to do. He recites some history. Please, all these gangsta rappers telling black people with college educations what to do. That doesn't strike you as odd?
Okay, so you're saying that lower class blacks have the upper and middle class in check.
You know it. You'd get called Uncle Tom in a second if you went against the kind of agenda they set. Right? I mean, I'm not saying be white, but this tough guy stuff is not exactly your Stanley Kaplan formula for success. Imagine if white people were dictated to by white trash. We'd all live in trailer parks and West Virginia would be the most populous state.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to get through this thing called life. Electric word, life, it means forever, and that's a mighty long time. But I'm here to tell you, there's something else.
Hawk, who goes yonder?
It is I, sire, Richard of Nottingham.
Well, speak up, man, what is it?
News from the east, sire. Rick the Ruler has returned.
It's abracadabra, a la baby professor. All hail funkin' lesson, sweet tongue grand writer of scrolls. Now behold, let the legend unfold. Born in a cosmos where no time and space do exist. Vibe in the midst of the chaos. Mortals label me as a locker.
You're traveling to another radio show. A broadcast not only of sight and sound, but of mind. A journey into a wondrous land whose boundaries are that of the imagination. That's the on-air sign up ahead. Your next stop, Afro Nerd Radio, with your guide, Diva, a.k.a. Afro Nerd.
Good evening, folks. Wednesday, Afro Nerd Radio. Folks, I want to first give kudos to our listening audience, our stalwart and loyal listening audience, because it appears when we check our numbers, our listenership numbers are growing. So the infection, the Afro Nerdism, as was coined by the great Captain Kirk, it is spreading, and it needs to be spreading. Trust me on this. Folks, we have a fully fledged, fully packed show for you, Afro Nerd, featuring Captain Kirk, a.k.a. Afro Nerd Radio. The call-in number, 646-915-9620, 646-915-9620. I'm probably going to repeat myself to some degree because we do have new listeners. When we have new listeners, I'm going to have to reacquaint our methodology, our philosophy to the new audience. So for those who know what we're about, just hang on. It'll be over soon. But for those who are just coming in, don't be scared. The water is warm. First up, music is a very important part of the Afro Nerd experience. So I'm going to give you some more urban alternative, progressive hip-hop, Afro-punk, black rock, you name it. Everything that is not being played on conventional radio, we will play here. This is Time Leak featuring Talib Kweli, Union. We'll be back in a few moments. Let's groove.
Come on. Okay. Okay. Let's go. Check it out. Yo, I got experience. How many books you truly read? Oh, the horror like a gloomy set. Zombies moving slower than the syrup that be oozing out the movie dead. I ain't a perfect man, I'm trying to do what Umi says. I got a wife and I try to protect her, yeah. Cause the broken heart is a side effect of the lie detector. She like a blind specter. I try to check her sometimes, it's effective. Like making the lie and blind effective. I rhyme religiously, I live vigorously. Black man hate the nigger in me. You diss me, I'll be the bigger MC. What? Literally and figuratively. Spit on you and spit to the beat. Word, it's so complete. It's so spiritual. I know God personally. My flow's a miracle. You can pray the Lord and raise the sword. I turn the words to flesh. This the resurrection you was praying for.
Oh,
writer's conscience. No, the writer's bomb shit, this is the writer's conference. I'm writing nonsense, rhymes to the writer's complex. Yet it's still so simple for you to prosper. It's like black hair, that's why they always pick it. It's like cashmere. Love the way it's fitting. We share the same sentiments, but I say it different. Words. Why they pay for the play, I'm on my way to kick it. Wait until the weight is lifted. But that'll never happen. Until the bucket gets kicked, I'll be forever rapping. Still niggas never napping. It's time to wake them up. Treat them like weed on your CD and I break them up. Play the cut like a DJ. I sign your CD, let you flip the bitch up on eBay. Get paid, just be sure you get my next release. So when I put the chicken in the pot, each one of my kids can get an extra piece.
Okay, folks, once again, now Talib Kweli, Union. All right, folks, once again, Afternoon featuring Captain Kirk, the Midweek in Review show. I couldn't do the show, as I've said recently, could not do the show effectively without Captain Kirk. Captain, you're needed once again on the bridge.
Let's get into it. The final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission, to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no one has gone before.
Okay, now let's get into this. It wasn't on the docket, but we have to talk about it. Because it has happened, and they're talking about it ferociously as we speak. Obama condemns outrageous attack in Libya. Obama condemns outrageous attack in Libya. What attack is this? Well, President Barack Obama has condemned Tuesday's attack on the U.S. consulate in Benghazi, Libya, that killed four Americans, including Ambassador Chris Stevens. Now, for those of you who can recall, back in October, let me get the date right, October 20th, 2011, the Libyan president, Omar Gaddafi, was killed. Let me repeat that. October 20th, 2011, the Libyan president, Omar Gaddafi, was killed. Now, I'm going to open this up to debate with the great Afro Nerd. But I'm going to say a few things first before I open it up to debate. The United States and the UN, regardless of how you feel, are going around to other countries. They're dictating policy. They're dictating leadership. They're uprooting countries, regardless of however you feel. There might be a little retribution that goes with this. You understand? We lost the ambassador today, and it's a very tragic situation. But something, it's just something for the people to think about. The American people to think about. When the UN runs around and United States runs around, quote-unquote liberating people, uprooting people, regime change, there might be a little retribution for what transpires, what takes place. And this just might be that. Afro-Nerd, let's open it up to debate, because I believe Romney is running up his mouth, as they would say in the street. So over to you, Afro-Nerd. Put a little words of wisdom on this, if you will, please.
Well, I'm not so sure if it's going to be classified as a debate between you and I. It's probably just going to be a deliberation of the facts. From my understanding, You know, listen, first of all, a lot of what we're dealing with has to deal with nation building. As much as I am appreciative of the symbolic nature of President Barack Obama's presidency, and again, it is of a symbolic nature, and I want him to get a second term. The reality is that the die has been cast, and the way that we operate, I'm saying we collectively as an American nation, we are in the business of nation building. Because why do we have to have embassies in certain regions of the world? We have embassies in Japan. We have embassies in Germany. You know, former foes, 70 years later, we're still there. Even in Iraq, even though we have left Iraq in theory, but we really haven't, we are still going to be there. We never leave. We never leave. And the populace has their fair share of resentment because of that. So we get our own share of propaganda, as do the nation states that we are having conflicts with. So the reality is, as I said, the die has been cast. America, irrespective of whoever is going to be in that office, even if Romney takes the helm in November, or more specifically in January, but let's say he wins in November, there's going to be very little difference as to the policy that America takes and the posture that America takes when it confronts these different nation states, especially, and the audience knows this, especially if we're dealing with natural resources. If there's a natural resource that we can exploit, you better believe we will be there, and it's going to cause conflict. And unfortunately, this embassy had to carry the brunt of that anger because embassies, as I'm pretty sure our audience are fully aware, they're essentially, even though it's in Libya, it is legally on American soil. They attacked American soil within Libya. That's what it means to have an embassy anywhere. So conversely, if we have a Libyan embassy here, that is Libya, even though it is geographically in the United States. So between the propaganda that I'm sure the Libyans are receiving and the propaganda that we also receive from our government, no one knows the truth. You may never get the truth. But for the sake of this election, it appears that Romney misspoke because, you know, again, we're talking about a serious issue. We're talking about American lives being lost, American flags being desecrated. And also at the same time, you're looking for the jockeying of positions within a political race, one-upmanship. So in his hubris, Romney, he lambastes Obama because he has to. No matter what Obama does, it's always going to be wrong. That's just the nature of the beast. But I'm eager to see how the media takes this story because, again, this alleged apology tour that the conservatives have always foisted upon Barack Obama ever since he took office, that he's being apologetic to other nations across the seas, across the country. This apology tour, he allegedly apologized for, I believe, some kind of cartoon or some kind of alleged what's the word I'm looking for? Some kind of alleged attack against the Libyans or against the Muslim culture. So he apologized for this before the attack. The way that Romney had worded this, he made it seem as if he apologized after the attack, and now they're calling Romney, some are calling Romney a rookie. But let's see how that plays out. What are your thoughts on that, Captain? That A, is Romney a rookie? B, does it really matter at the end of all this, that the politics internationally, how they're going to conduct themselves, the Americans, it doesn't really matter who takes office. It's already been set.
Well, as we said on this show here, the both of us agreed that Romney lacks the deportment. He lacks the deportment for the position. We said that right here on this show. We didn't use the word deportment. We used a different word, but that's what it is, essentially, with him at this given time. So one could chalk that up as being a rookie. Being a rookie. He's not polished enough at this given time. The moves are very pawn-ish when they're supposed to be more like a knight or a bishop. Talking chess language now for those of you that play the game. He's doing things in a pawn-like manner. Supposed to be a bit more polished, a bit more seasoned. You're supposed to know how to move. You understand? If he was a quarterback, I would say he's more like Tim Tebow at times instead of Peyton Manning. You understand? You have to be polished. When you're in the president position, you have to move on point, and he's not doing that at all. Now, Obama, we know, is not going to get a fair shake regardless of however he moves, and I totally agree with you saying that this is just the policy that regardless of whoever's in the White House, this is what America does. This is what it is. You're absolutely correct pertaining to that. Now, one thing I would like to add, I believe it's a cartoon and also is a film that they were protesting about, the Libyan protesters that came out. And, you know, that's what led to all the riots and everything else that was going on. So that's more or less along the lines what Obama was apologetic about and everything else, which that right there is called what you call, you know, a diplomatic type of move. You understand? That's the type of move you're supposed to make as a president. So let me just do this to try to quiet things down before things happen. Romney, not being on point, he lost the dribble. This was basketball. He had the dribble, bringing it up across the line, you know, midcourt. He loses the dribble. It got stolen. Again, Romney, come on now. Come on, Romney. All right? You have to step it up. You have to do better. People are watching you. Afro Nerd featuring Captain Kirk, we are watching you. Back over to you, Sir Afro Nerd.
Yeah, you know, this is the thing that's upsetting with today's media outlets. Everyone has their own bent. You know, the Republicans will accuse mainstream media as being liberal media. And conversely, liberal media will take umbrage with more conservative outlets for their take on things. So I would prefer for things to be more down the middle. Just give it to me straight and honest. So that's problematic. So, I mean, the world is so different. And the fact that, you know, coming out of the convention, this time the Democratic convention, from my understanding, Barack Obama's up about 6 or 7 points. But we live so day to day with the way the media operates. It is so day to day that, you know, this comes out of the blue, this major attack in Libya now becomes a, you know, fodder for the left and the right. Becomes essentially a volleyball to be talked about between the left and the right. And my thing is, will we get to the truth? I mean, you see the anxiousness that Romney had in trying to report this or trying to put his spin on it and showing, well, this goes to show that Obama doesn't know what he's really doing. If you're going to do that, you better have laser precision when you do this. But it looks like the egg is on Romney's face. I don't know if it's necessarily being reported that way. Now, all you see, and I'm looking in Google now, all you see now is the Romney and the conservatives, as if it's some new rock group. Romney and the conservatives ratchet up attacks on Obama. I mean, let's get away from the political posturing and find out what happened. But as you said, this has to do with, you are correct, I do remember, it was dealing with a cartoon and a film. And I remember actually listening to Sean Hannity today, because I listen to everyone. I listened to Sean Hannity today, and of course he's railing against Obama. That's just what he does. That's where you see how disingenuous it is. At least here at AfroNerd, we try to give you a nuanced view of things, a nuanced view of things. You know that a lot of these other outlets, whether they be on the left or right, are being intellectually dishonest because they refuse to give you a nuanced view of things. It's always this or that. It's never straight down the middle, how, as far as honesty is concerned. But with his attack on Obama, he's not going to be honest about what Romney did. Romney misspoke as if he apologized for something that did not happen yet. He apologized, or was, I should say, reverential about this cartoon. And then he goes on to say, in American cases, there have been cases where American ideals or something that is representative of America has been defaced or defamed, and Americans do not react the way that these Islamic folk are reacting. But my thing is, after listening to this, is how can you expect – I mean, with a Western mind, this belief that a Western mind, that everyone's going to have a Western mind, or, in our favorite word, a Western comportment or deportment, it's lunacy. Well, you know, he went through this whole diatribe about, well, you know, this happened to us, you know, X, Y, Z happened to Americans, and we didn't burn people up, and we didn't kill people, blah, 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 blah. Be that as it may, with those of the Islamic faith, and I would say, you know, to be more accurate, those who have a more fundamentalist take on Islam, maybe this is the way they react to their religion. There's no way you're going to have to deal with people how they come to you. These folks believe in a certain way and conduct themselves in a certain way based on their religion. You have to, meaning Americans, Americans or Westerners are going to have to learn how to calibrate to that. Maybe in our world, if someone defaces Catholicism or says something against Mormons, we won't chop off somebody's head. We won't burn people at the stake, whatever. But to expect other folks who have a different cultural standard than you to react in a Western way is folly. And listening to Hannity, this guy is an idiot, but he has a very popular show. We're going to go to musical break, Captain. What are your thoughts about that? This whole I hear this on occasion. This whole expectation of folks who are not Western to react in a Western way. Someone who is again, you're talking about countries that are essentially, you know, they're theocracies in some way. They govern based on their religion. And listen, it may be idiocy to us from a Western perspective, but if you know this is what they believe, this is their culture, this is how they react, wouldn't it make sense to calibrate ourselves to some degree? You're expecting a certain level of comportment from these folks, looking at them through Western eyes. That's mistake number one, isn't it? What are your thoughts before we go to a musical break?
Well, you just asked me a loaded question, a very loaded question, getting to the whole plan of the UN. What the UN, essentially, what they're really set up for is to push that American ideal across the whole world and push it upon it. And what they do once the country's uprooted, what do? They set up a central bank and they try to set up those type of ideals in every country. They feel, according to the UN, that's the way it's supposed to be, the way we run it here in America or England, so to speak. That's the way they feel it's supposed to be, and that's the ideals that they're trying to push. And when you do not have those ideals, they show the big polarization on TV. That's what they do. And people are not going to have the same ideals across the world, just as you said. It's impossible to do that. And even if you go into the country and you totally uproot and do exactly what you want to do, there's going to be backlash for it. There's going to be groups of people that run around that say, I'm not having it. So there you have it, Seraph on Earth.
Yep. This story we will follow. I'm sure there'll be more to come out of the story and probably more stories to go. I mean, this is, you know, again, as I said before, We live in such a 24-hour news cycle that every day there's something. There's you know, very little consistency. I could think, you know, maybe 20 years ago, 30 years ago, before the advent of the internet, before the advent of Twitter and cell phones and this constant need for communication, that I just suspect things moved a little bit slower, that news wasn't in your face or on your phone or on your watch so abruptly. We live in times where it's a day-to-day thing. So this story will be ongoing. We will be on the story, and I'm sure there will be more stories within this 60-day period during this election season. All right, going into a musical break, giving you the best of urban alternative, progressive, hip-hop, acid jazz, you name it. This is Joe McBride with his version of CeeLo's Crazy. We'll be back in a few moments. Let's groove.
Y'all think I'm crazy? Let's be crazy. Be crazy. I got to be crazy. Here we go. I remember when I lost my mind. There was something so pleasant about that day. Even your emotions have an echo in empty space. Yeah, I was out there, I was out of touch. But it wasn't because I didn't know enough. I just knew too much.
Oh, God. Again, Joe McBride channeling CeeLo's Crazy. I think he did a very good job on that one, folks. Again, don't be scared. This is Afro Radio, a.k.a. Afro featuring Captain Kirk. The call-in number is 646-915-9620, 646-915-9620. Quickly, I do want to let our audience know, giving you some information, that this upcoming Sunday, the 16th, for our Week in Review show, we're expecting actress and filmmaker Sandra Fond Dufay. Now, Ms. Dufay, only 22 years of age, she's already putting out her own film. The film is called Ye Fon. She is an African actress, and she's involved with this Kickstarter campaign where she is looking to collect upwards of $50,000 for the completion, or I guess the distribution rights for this film. And what compelled me to have her on the show, not only because of her Kickstarter campaign, but because of the premise of Ye Fon. Now, quickly, Ye Fon is a story of a young lady who seeks to gain, I believe, a Western education and become a teacher. But it's against her male villagers' traditions. So because she's defiant in becoming a teacher and in visiting America, she is sentenced to death for breaking this tradition. So I support anything, and the captain knows this. I would believe we are together on this. We support anything that's non-menstrual. Our folks know and understand that. That's just our thing. Anything that's just different, as long as it's not mama, grandmama stole my cornbread. You know, Shaniqua did me wrong. As long as it's not one of those Tyler Perry-esque films, I'm going to support it. So this, we have to support this young lady in her efforts. Definitely check out our Facebook page. Definitely check out Kickstarter. I believe there's a link on the latest entry about Up Sunday show regarding Ms. Dufay's project. So, again, check us out. It's going to be a festive conversation. She's going to go in deep as to what's going on with this particular film. And there's some folks of note in the film as well. Jimmy Jean Louis, the actor who played the quote-unquote the Haitian, that was his character, the Haitian in Heroes, he's in this film. And an actor by the name of Hakeem Kazim from Hotel Rwanda. Again, quite a few folks of note in this film, so it's not a low-pro project. It's an independent film, but there's a lot of implications. And I just want to support this young sister. I'll go tribal on this one. In and out of tribalism. When you do well, I'll become part of your tribe. When you F up, I excommunicate myself from the tribe. This time, I have my arms open. So check out Sandra Fond Dufay for this Sunday show. All right, moving right along. You know, we had a listener that came in from Texas, actually. She was part of our two shows, Captain, if you remember, from last week. Yes, she sir. Hung in. She came in for the comic shop, where it's essentially a geek fest. And she hung in through that because she had an interest. She thought, and rightfully so, that the conversation was stimulating, and then she followed through for the next show, which, of course, is this one, Afronaut Radio, and she had talked about how much she learned from us, and it was a different kind of show, and she was really, really lauding over our show, and I really appreciate her kind words, but she made me remind myself that ever so often I'm going to have to reacquaint certain things, certain memes, certain tropes that we promulgate from this show. There's certain things that we do over and over again, and I have to do it over and over again because we're always getting new listeners. So at the tail end of the show, when she was going on about learning different things and learning that there are different types of black people, that's my thing. We're very much into promoting the notion and the fact that there are different types of black folk. And it reminded me of the caste system in India. You know, the Brahmins, they were the top of the caste. There's probably, I think it still exists to this day, where there's 3, 4, 5 different types or tier levels within Indian culture, Brahmins being at the top of that. There are a number of different classes and castes within American Western culture, castes irrespective of race. But there are also castes, especially in the black community, that some of us are not aware of, some of us are uncomfortable with. But, hey, when I see the Shaquans and the Raekwans, the Lakeishas, Ronifas, Shenanes, and the sorts rampaging through our communities, killing babies, killing the elderly, or maiming babies, maiming the elderly, you have to be told what you are looking at in order to seek safety. And also out of respect, there's a certain respect that we're not given, that is folks of color, black people in particular, there's a certain amount of respect that we're not given when there's the assumption that we are a monolith. And we are not a monolith. So I repeat this ever so often, especially to our new listenership who may be unfamiliar with this show, but that's part of what we are doing here. The term Afro nerd is something that I coined, but essentially it talks about a subset of black folk that are more into learned pursuits, geeky pursuits. There's a myriad of different types of black folks, whether it's Afro-Latins. I'll go into this over and over again. Afro-Latins, black Brits, Africans, and then there are all the different types of Africans. Africa is a continent. I'm sure that Ms. Dufay, when she comes in, she will get into that as well, being a person who is from Africa. So you have different tribes in Africa, and then you have the Africans that do come to the Americas. You have the Carib Indians, a.k.a. Caribbeans, Westerners, Southerners, Northerners, different political spectrums. Now we're learning more about different sexual preferences, regions. I mean, there are so many different types of black folk, even if you throw in economics and educational levels, that kind of thing. It doesn't mean someone is black or blacker than thou. Those who come from the biracial experience. You name it, there are different types of black folk coming from different perspectives. And this whole need for us to all be one, we look for this. Some of us really just look for the monolith, this whole brother-sister thing. Heck, we became brothers and sisters when we were at the in the helms of slave ships. Although, undoubtedly, you had slaves that were chained to each other who were from warring factions. The man that was defecating on you or urinating on you while you were in the hull of a slave ship was probably from a warring tribe. However, circumstances made it that you had to be brothers. All that animosity and vitriol and war went out the window when the white man came. So I remind our audience of these things because some of our problems are rooted in this sense that we are all the same. We must vote the same way. We must look the same way, And when there's a portrayal of blackness, oftentimes it's rooted in a lower tier urban portrayal, which is a dishonest one. It's dishonest, Catherine, because it comes off as the sole representation. Some of the nonsense that we see might ameliorate or be lessened if we were respected like others are, with the knowledge that we are not all on the same page. Simple and plain. I know nothing of the projects. Nothing, personally. I wasn't raised with a silver spoon, but I was very fortunate. That undoubtedly very fortunate. Two-parent household, you name it. But that's not to disrespect those who come from the projects. There's folks who can't listen. Sonia Sotomayor, who I mention all the time, who is now on the Supreme Court, she comes from the projects. Well, the projects, I'm sure she would say, are not in her. That's just the circumstance she comes from. But she would probably give you a different aspect. The deal is everyone needs to be heard. Everyone needs equal timing. But this whole notion that black folks are on the same page is the death of us. It will be the death, and it is going to be the death of us unless we come out. Just as there is a respect for those who are white, that we know fully that they're Southerners, that they're Northerners, that they're Jewish, Italian, Irish, German, all these different striations of whiteness we are fully aware of. Europeans, Swiss, all these different types of white folks we are fully aware of, and yet the street black that we always say kind of in a funny way, the street black, the Raekwon, is always perceived as the authentic, the quintessential black person. That cannot be the case. You have black folks who vacation at Oak Bluffs in Massachusetts. We have people who vacation at Martha's Vineyard. Upper tier black folks. They do exist. They do exist. That's it, Captain. I just have to reacquaint our audience sometimes on, especially the newbies, on this knowledge. Doesn't mean I think I'm better than anybody else, but we must come to grips with this notion of difference. Afro-punk crew, people listening to black rock, people listening to commercial minstrel hip-hop, people who listen to jazz, people who listen to blues, all these different types of black experiences, and yet we seem to constantly go back to there being one, to one being an authentic one. All of them are authentic. All of these experiences are authentic black experiences. All right, Captain. I think that's I think I've reacquainted our audience with some of my beliefs. But this is less about beliefs. You can look this up. I'm not talking out of my butt. This is the case. This is the case. What are your thoughts, Captain?
I agree with you. You summed it up very well. There's nothing more to add to that at all. It's a great job, sir. Great job.
Well, you know what it is. You know, there's this need to, hey, brother, 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 brother. Shaquana, stab you in your neck. I'm supposed to keep on with this brother. No, 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 no. Not really. Just because we look alike doesn't mean that we're all on the same page. All right, folks. Actually, no, I want to segue into a Wikipedia faux pas. A Wikipedia faux pas. Philip Roth, author of The Human Stain. And I don't know if I'm going to be able to even get into The Human Stain completely. The Human Stain is a fascinating book. Roth wrote this book a few years back, and it was adapted for a film which starred Anthony Hopkins and Nicole Kidman. And it's a fascinating story, but that's a side thing. He made the news recently over something that you would think is innocuous, Captain, but I think it really belies a lot more than something being minor. Philip Roth had some difficulty in contacting Wikipedia regarding a correction with him. Now, here is the author, the author himself, who's going to know about his book. And there was a notation in Wikipedia that went into the main character in The Human Stain, who this character was based on, or who inspired the inspiration for the main character in The Human Stain. They had it as one person, and Roth, well, he knew who it was, who inspired the main character. So he tried to correct Wikipedia, and it took some time for them to correct this notation about his book from the author himself. So it made me think that there's so much, as much of a boon that the internet is, Captain, it is also a bane. That we can never forget the importance of libraries, the importance of true scholarship, the importance of research. I think there's a lot, and this is indicative of mainstream media, by the way. Mainstream media does this a lot. Do that a lot. They actually rely on Wikipedia, the internet, without doing the due diligence. And something like this, coming from the author himself, and the irony is that he had difficulty in getting this correction made. Even more specific, I don't get specific, so I'm looking at the Huffington Post. Let me read this quickly for our audience. The prize-winning author says he's furious. No, actually, says Philip Roth versus Wikipedia, no contest. The prize-winning author says he's furious with the online encyclopedia over its entry about his novel, The Human Stain. In a letter posted Friday by The New Yorker, Roth says Wikipedia editors had said the book was inspired by the life of author Anatoly Broyard. Not true, Roth responded. The character was based on the late Melvin Turin of Princeton University. So two different people, and yet he had some difficulty in having this thing updated, and again, it's not some schlub coming from nowhere trying to make this correction. It's the author himself. So it scares me that culturally we're getting to the point where we may not be able to confirm anything with great accuracy. This is how, you know, dovetailing off of what's happening with the Obama campaign. 4 years later, and folks are able to continue this meme of him being a Muslim, of the spurious nature of his birth certificate. All these things can be confirmed. They can be confirmed. And yet the internet and the nature of it and the nature of how nothing is accurate anymore. I remember many years ago, you could pretty much confirm things to their accuracy. Because of the internet, I think it's opened up a whole new door of nothing can really be believed. I think the internet, as much as I love the internet and we do our business on the internet, there's aspects of it that are scary to me. Captain, what are your thoughts about this? Or maybe I'm off base. I mean, do you think that we're living in a period, an unprecedented period where we cannot confirm anything, that nothing is true?
Well, there's an old saying, a very old saying, and it's probably as old as beginning of time. Anything that comes too easy is normally not worth anything. Let me repeat that. It's an old saying, and it's very old, very old. No one can date this saying. Anything that comes too easy is normally not worth anything. Now, the thing with the internet, information comes very easy. Very, very easy. many years ago, what you had to do, I would say even a generation ago, and a generation, again, is 20 to 30 years, so we split the difference, let's say 25 years ago. Internet was around, was starting to come onto the being, you know, but it wasn't really there like that, all right? It wasn't really there like that. It wasn't really in everyone's household or anything else, all right? Keep in mind, the military also had the internet for many years before that also. But now, the way you looked up, the way you got information, you looked things up. You went to the library, you read books, or you might have even had the pleasure of talking to the person face-to-face who did whatever research, whatever you were trying to research. That's the way you got information. You had to do the work. The term they used to use was legwork, because you had to get up and go to that destination to get the information, which is called legwork. Now what happens with the internet, information is easy. Easy access. So what people in the know, they always say, to find out anything, you need 6 points of reference in a 3D universe. Sometimes you cannot get 6 points of reference, but you can normally get 3 points of reference on the internet. So if you're looking up information, you have to use at least 3 points of reference and make sure everything collaborates between the three. If you see any differences, then you have to start doing more research again. That's how you have to use the internet. That's the only way you can, because it is too easy to get information. And as I said, the old saying, old things stand for a lot, very long time, things such as that. The old saying is, if it comes too easy, it's not worth anything. It's not worth your while. It's too easy. It's just too easy. Same goes for women a lot of times. It comes too easy, you know. How many other people got it? It's not really worth a while. So that being
it's
said.
Funny. It's funny you mention it, because the female wiles, that did come to my mind when you said about that, something that comes too easy.
Yes.
That did come to, that came to mind. It's like one of the first things in my head. You know, when you're dealing with a woman, especially a woman of a certain caliber.
That's right. It can't come too easy. You don't want it to come too difficult. It could turn you off also. But it can't come too easy.
It can apply to anything. But for some reason, when you went into that, women came to mind.
It's correct. Just look back into your past. Anything that
I'd rather
too
not.
Easy.
I'd rather not.
Where is she now? The easy ones. Where are they now? You don't even remember them. You don't remember them.
No,
that's
comment.
All I want to say on that. Back over to you, Sir Afro Nerd.
Yes, folks. Again, you're listening to the midweek edition, midweek and review edition of Afro Radio. Call in number 646-915-9620, 646-915-9620. I do want to go to yet another musical break, but I do want to mention something. You know, we did mention this whole notion of Philip Roth and how he had difficulty with correcting something regarding his own book, The Human Stain. And I would implore our listenership to not only check out the book, but you can also check out the film. I'm pretty sure you can get it on Netflix. It's a couple of years old with Anthony Hopkins. I think Gary Sinise was also in it, and Nicole Kidman. And just quickly, the story is quite compelling because it deals with aspects of what's happening today with race and perception, and racism and perception, and political correctness and perception. Just quickly, very quickly, before we go to the musical break, the story deals, the main character is a college professor, about 70, 71 years of age, and the professor gets accused of racism by two black students. It becomes a big hullabaloo, so much to the point where he has to leave his position at this college. Now the irony of it is that the students that he referred to in a derogatory way, this is where it's very, very PC, in a very just funky way. The main character, the professor, Coleman Silk is the name, by the way. Coleman Silk is the character played by Anthony Hopkins. He refers to two missing students in his class, Captain, as spooks. Okay. He did not know, because he never saw these kids. He was always checking for attendance. He did not know these students. He did not know the race of these students. Follow me? He says to the class, because he's calling these young people out, and they're never there. So he says in a seminar, do these students exist, or are they spooks? Do they exist, or are they spooks? Now, honestly, no one would have perceived that as a racial thing. Do they exist, or are they spooks? That obviously referenced, are they ghosts? So when he used the term spooks, not knowing who the students were or their ethnicity, he finds out later that they're black. So all of a sudden it becomes a racial thing, and he is expelled from his position. What makes it even more ironic is that Coleman Silk had been passing as a Jewish person when in actuality he was of African descent. He was passing. So it's a very fascinating story about race and about political correctness, and I would implore our listenership, even though it's a couple of years old, actually, boy, I think it came out in 2006 or 2003, I think. Yeah, the film, now it's 10 years old. The film and the book, The Human Stain. All right. Always trying to give out anecdotal information. I just thought the story was so fascinating that folks need to be about that film. All right. Once again, more Muzak. Let's go into Roy Hargrove. Roy Hargrove. More, a little bit more jazz this evening. Roy Hargrove, the Roy Allen song. We'll be back in a few moments. Let's groove. We'll be right back. Roy Hargrove, Roy Allen's song. Again, folks, we're at the midway point, a little bit beyond the midway point at Afternoon featuring Captain Kirk. I do want to talk briefly about, and I have difficulty talking about this stuff at times, Captain, because it's just nonsense. But people are dying for nonsensical reasons. So, we can talk about Philip Roth. We can talk about what's happening in Libya. But we have our own version of Libya and Middle Eastern strife, in a way, right here in the good old USA. Chicago, Chi-Town, shouting out Sergio Mims. There's a rapper of note, new on the scene, Chief Keef, a.k.a. Keith Cozart. Only 17 years of age, so he was literally born half past yesterday, Captain. And it's amazing someone could be so young and be involved in so much mess, just hot garbage. Anyway, Chief Keef, this is the Rube Goldberg syndrome once again, where it's just a whole lot of things going on and someone dies. Anyway, Chief Keef, recent employee of Jimmy Iovine's Interscope Records. I think Jimmy Iovine hires Eminem and 50 Cent and that whole crew. So now they have the next young gun. But I hate even the term gun, but young gun, Chief Keef. And as far as this being street-level stuff, this is exactly what it is. On the street-level stuff, he has a beef with another young hip-hop artist, Little Jojo, who ends up getting killed. I'm not saying that Keith had anything to do with it per se, but there was a lot of vitriol, a lot of aggression, a lot of hot talk going on between both these individuals. And then when this young hip-hop artist, I put artist in quotes, ends up getting killed in a very violent way, I think both these guys have so many different beefs going on. They're angry at everybody. You can't even pinpoint the perps in these matters because they have beef with simultaneously with so many different people. Anyway, Little Joe gets killed, and Chief Keef allegedly goes on his Twitter account and just goes all in after this young man made his demise. There's no such thing as, you know, having some deference towards your enemy or cooling it down a little bit, or if he's met his demise through violent means, then let it lay low. Let it lie. Let sleeping dogs lie. These guys don't believe in that. Even in death, some of these individuals just continue going on and on and on. So allegedly he said some disparaging things about this late rapper. And you know, you have to understand this is in a maelstrom of so many other things going on. Chicago, right now they're going through a public school strike. So students aren't going to school. Their parents are keeping them indoors because of the violence that are outside. They'd even prefer for them to be indoors while they're not going to school, because if they're outside, their lives might be in danger. I mean, we're literally talking about Chicago being, and I've mentioned this before on the show, Captain, Chicago being likened to 1970s Beirut. It is that bad. It is that bad. And having these artists and this kind of music as the background music, it's not exactly the same thing as Curtis Mayfield in the background of the civil rights movement. Oh, no, no. It's a different soundtrack for a different generation. It's a soundtrack of nihilism. So, anyway, we're hearing about this beef between Keith and now the late Little Joe. And then there's unwanted beef between a more conscious hip-hop artist who we played on the show on occasion, Lupe Fiasco, who's a little bit older than than Chief Keef actually. He's still a young man, but you're talking about a real, a teen, 17. Fiasco's probably in his mid-20s, maybe even early 30s. Anyway, when asked about, I believe, I should have had the clip ready, but sometimes I don't want to, sometimes I don't even want to get that deep into this stuff. But when asked about Chicago, and again, all the parties mentioned are Chicago residents, or they hail from Chicago, I should say. When asked about the violence in Chicago, and I believe he might have been asked about Chief Keef, but he brings up Chief Keef, and he says, what scares me more is Chief Keef. Not him personally, but the culture that he represents. And he goes on about these brothers are killing themselves. They need to really quiet it down. The culture is really out of control. Something has to be done. I pray for these brothers. He's being very thoughtful about what he's saying. He's being very conscious about what he's saying because, again, he has that conscious rapper moniker. Heck, isn't common from Chicago as well? I mean, there's a strain of consciousness in hip-hop that comes from Chicago, believe it or not. These new cats don't represent that, unfortunately, ladies and gentlemen. Anyway, in being somewhat careful in his language, in being careful in his with his language about Chief Keef still didn't want to hear that and threatens the conscious rapper guy. He threatens the conscious guy. And the conscious guy, in an intelligent way, says, I can't do this anymore. He talks about even leaving the rap game now. I don't want to indulge this. He's a highly intelligent guy. He's using Afro-nerdic paradigms. Definitely. Definitely. Because he could have been with the rah-rah. The normal rapper or the stereotypical rapper would have responded in a very foul way. So, I mean, Captain, what are your thoughts on this? That this young man is talking about leaving the game of hip hop. And not only leaving the game of hip hop, but he even says, I'm paraphrasing, Captain, but he says, I would even die for these young men, although I know they would probably spit on my grave. Some pretty powerful stuff coming from this guy. But he says, I can't do this. I would like to leave the rap game. What are your thoughts?
Well, let's back up in time. Let's go way, way, way back. And I'll be using some words from KRS-One and also from Will Smith. KRS-One, Knowledge Reigns Supreme, and most people will know who Will Smith is. Okay. Now, when the rap/hip-hop got started, most of those guys doing it were impoverished people, and they were trying to leave the impoverished situation behind. So you got into breakdancing, DJing, maybe a little bit of graffiti, even though that's defacing and everything, and rap, to leave the fighting behind. That's what you did with your extra free time. You got into it. And then if you could turn it into something professional, that was even better. So Will Smith turned around and said, when he was like 17, 18 years of age, he said, you got into it to party, to make people feel good because the violence was in the street. You were trying to get away from that. And then when the gangster, quote unquote, that's the term that media gave it, we call it here thug culture. When the gangster rap hip-hop came back to Will Smith, he said he didn't understand it because this is not what this was about. But what it is with music, it always represents the culture at the given time. time. Right now, we seem to be stuck. You ever play a record? For those of you that can remember, a lot of you don't know anything about records if you're young. For those of you who are real young, under 20, you play a record and it just skips, 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 skips. And the more it skips, the scratch gets bigger and bigger. That's what's happening right now, too. The scratch is getting bigger and bigger because it's representing a culture, and the scratch is getting bigger and bigger and bigger and bringing everybody down. They're trying to bring everybody down to this subculture. You're supposed to be trying to move away from that via the music and uplift. Now, in that clip also, Mr. Fiasco said, Chief Keef looks like a lot of people. He goes to Atlanta, he sees someone that looks like him. He goes to Texas, he sees someone that looks like him. He goes to Florida. You cannot tell them apart. So pretty much, what is he trying to say? Everyone gets caught up into that same type of mix-up, mash-up, even if they're not doing the thugging, the gang-banging, the selling the drugs, the chopping up cars and selling parts or whatever that they're doing. Hustle, whatever illegal type of hustling that they're doing. Everyone gets caught up. So the music, yes, I understand this is what they market. It makes a lot of money, and it's the culture that you're in. And when you're in it, you can't see left or right or very far in front of you. I understand that. But that does not make it right at the end of the day. It's very damaging on both ends. They're taking Jimmy Iovine, is taking advantage, of course. He has to make a dollar. That's what they do. That's what corporations been doing. They do to all of us. You know, so we have to develop the means, the ideology, to move differently, which is very difficult to do when they tell you, okay, you do your album this way, your budget is $800,000. If you do it this way, your budget is only be $100,000, and maybe I won't really push it. So what way does the youth go even if he does know better? You see, that's what happens. It's a game on both sides. And then a lot of times, the person doing the music, now I'm not justifying what they're doing, I'm just giving you, let you see the other side. Because I've been around it a little bit, so I get to see. A lot of times what happens, you start living and believing the hype on your records. You start really believing this is really you. I'm keeping it real. You're in a corporation. You're not keeping anything real or fake. You're doing a job. And right now, he seems to be doing the job perfectly, Chief Keef, because he's selling records. That's all what it is. You're doing a job. You're part of a corporation that exploits you to the extreme extent. That's what it is. Whether you think you're thugging, you're keeping it real, or whatever else, you're selling records, it's a corporation. You're part of the corporation that exploits you and brings you down at the end of the day. It's not a good thing. But, you know, I see what's going on. Unfortunately, him being 17, he's not going to see what's going on at the given time. All right? He's not going to see. Something that Master P said later on. He said when he was in it, he couldn't see how much damage that he was doing when he was putting out that music. He couldn't see it because he was making so much money and everything else. It was later on after he left it and he looked back at it and he said, wow. This is Master P. Master P made a lot of money via music, a lot of money, people, okay? A lot of money. But it's after he left it and things started to slow down as he got more mature, he said, wow, unbelievable. I could have been doing something else and still been able to make some money because I was part of it. I'm also part of the, I was part of the culture. I'm part of the damaging experience. I'm part of the drive that damaged the culture. It's amazing, though. Back over to you, Sir Afro Nerd.
Yeah, I want to take another musical break, but I do want to just expound on something that you were getting into about the origins of hip-hop. We know that hip-hop literally was birthed from the projects in the Bronx, I believe, on Cedric Avenue. And that actually has become a landmark of a sorts. When you have these hip-hop historical tours, they go to that project when they talk about literally the birthplace of hip-hop being from there. So we are talking about impoverished black and brown folk black and brown folk that developed this music. And I distinctly remember seeing video footage, documentaries, or even at the time, where they would interview some of the break dancers, and they were a little rough around the edges. They were street kids. But when they would talk about the music, they did talk about it in an uplifting way. It was about we're trying to show, I'm paraphrasing what I remember, but they literally the artists themselves at that time would say that, and they were 15-year-olds talking, saying, this is to show the world that we're not all thugs and out-of-control people. So there was a certain level of consciousness, even before the actual genre of conscious hip-hop. This is when it was very much in its infancy. It was very much about showing the world that we are not what you think we are. So there was some level of consciousness at that point during the late 70s, early 80s. And then even beyond that, when it started going out throughout the boroughs, when it was Queens and Staten Island and Long Island or Strong Island, as it were, there were many hip-hop artists that were from middle-class backgrounds that did not necessarily hide that fact also. See, now you'd have to hide that in order to be credible. Back then, you didn't necessarily have to hide that. Young MC, it was mentioned early on, he had a degree in economics from, I believe, USC. Kool Moe Dee was college educated. Chuck D was college educated. When you mentioned Will Smith, there was this whole thing about his parent, his mother was a teacher, and that he had aspirations for MIT. There's a lot of positive things going on back then. A lot, I believe, even in the rap song, Run DMC mentioned going to St. John's and studying mortuary science. See, so there's a lot of things that would not be considered cool today that were okay to mention back then.
Pete Knight, Columbia University.
Yes. The issue now is when we go back to Jimmy Iovine, is that the culture has been twisted. And it has been the ghetto or the thug culture specifically has been corporatized, Captain, meaning that as wild as some of these young artists are, their aberrant behavior contributes to record sales. It contributes to their mythology. So going to jail for gun possession or some kind of thuggish act doesn't really take away from money being made. So we've mentioned this before, and actually our friend Afrobrit brought this to our attention, that we should be mentioning this more. But the industry, the infrastructure itself allows for this, and they encourage it. See, normally, so this, all these things going on with this young man, he was under house arrest sometime last year, just talking about Chief Keef, under house arrest for gun possession. Now there's threats on Twitter. Now he's saying his Twitter account was hacked. Then there's beef between him and Lupe Fiasco. All this chaos is something that has become a product. Folks, the chaos is the product. 20, 25, 30, 35 years ago. This is how long hip-hop has been around now. The chaos was not the product. So when these kids, although they may have come out of chaotic backgrounds, they knew at that time that could not be sold. You could not sell that. Now, in some twisted menagerie, this stuff is a product. That's why it is imperative that we do what we're doing now. When I go on and on about urban alternative and Afropunk and black rock and acid jazz and upper tier, lower tier, all this stuff, education, HBCUs, I have to fight encounter, we both have to fight and counter this product. We are trying to submit an alternative product because for whatever reason, no one's handing it to Jimmy Iovine. Jimmy Iovine can sit back in his office, collect the checks, and not be concerned personally with the product that he produces that is actually responsible or I wouldn't say responsible, but is a contributor to this nihilism and to this death that is consistently being promoted. It has been promoted for 20-plus years, Captain. It has been promoted for 20-plus years. So it's even bigger than Chief Keef. But my difficulty is, why is he still hired? Why did anyone else get into some kind of wild trouble? The corporations immediately fire you. If you work for Warner Brothers, if you're an actor and does something and you do something crazy, or an athlete, under normal circumstances, you're gone. But in this world, it's almost expected. It's almost part of your job description. Whereas 35 years ago, it was not. Something has to be done. That's why we ask you, go to Afternoon Radio, check us out, go to our Twitter, go to our Facebook. We want to hear from you. Help us promote the show. It has a lot to do with a mission that we're on. We are truly on a mission, folks, to counter this. Something has to counter this nonsense because it is death. Little Joe is not breathing. For Lord knows what happened, 17 years of age. The kid was born yesterday. He's not here now. All right, folks. Let's go to a quick musical break, and then we'll have to start closing down. Let's groove a little. Let's get up on a little of an upbeat. This is Omar, UK's – actually, I will consider this some UK funk. UK funk, Omar and Angie Stone, Stylin'. We'll be back in a few moments. Let's get to it.
I can see that you're cool, got something I want to be down for anything you're selling now. You give me palpitation, Whoa, make your move, stop to prove, show me what you got. I can see you're ready when you're on the spot, like now. You give me palpitation, no.
Every day you
Time constraints, folks. Unfortunately, you had to stop that groove. That was Omar and Angie Stone, Stylin', a little bit of UK funk, one of my favorite cuts, actually. Again, you're listening to Afternoon featuring Captain Kirk. We've got about 3 minutes remaining, so we're going to have to end up closing the shop. Again, as I mentioned earlier, we're expecting Sandra Fondufay from the Yefan movie. She's going to talk about her Kickstarter campaign, talk about the movie intricately, exactly what's going on with the film, but it's a fascinating premise. And I want to hear more about her and about this project. So definitely come through on Sunday, 7 p.m. And of course, at 6 p.m. for the more fantasy, sci-fi, pulp-oriented fair. Check out the comic shop at 6 p.m. And of course, Afternoon Radio at 7 p.m. with Sandra Fondufay. You know, I did want to mention, well, first I have to give a hat tip and a salute to those fallen heroes for 9/11. We just had, yesterday was the 11th anniversary of the attack on the Pentagon and on the Twin Towers. And I did, you know, I wanted to mention something. We're going to have to talk about this on Sunday. Just quickly, Captain, it's got 2 minutes, but, you know, I forgot, there was an article on the Huffington Post that talked about this, Captain, how different things are now, 11 years later, with the advent of social media. Can you imagine social media, what that would have been like if it had existed during the attacks? Would have been far more maybe grotesque, but we would have known more. But you would have had people in the building tweeting. You might have had photographs. It would have been, you know, it's funny how life has changed demonstrably just through social media. That when things happen, you know, now we get a bird's eye view of it. But back then, even though it was still very modern, well, you wouldn't have gotten close-up horror pictures that you could potentially get now. Any thoughts? We got about a minute, unfortunately. We'll talk about it on Sunday.
Well, I'll talk about that on Sunday. Now, if you're a thug and you're listening, thugs end up in two places, either locked down or dead. That's what thugging gets you. That's it. Nothing more. I have nothing more to say on it. So stop thugging. Back over to you, Sir Afro. Let's get up out of here.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I couldn't say it any plainer than that, man. It is what it is. All right, folks, again, we'll see you on Sunday. This is All the Critics Love You in New York. Check us out Sunday, 6 and 7.
Love you in New York. Oh, love you. appetite.